Welcome to Meeple Night, a podcast about board games, present, past, future, all those different times. I don't remember the order anymore, and all the stories behind them. In today's episode, we discuss our top 10 and make a comeback. I'm Andrew Caprell, and here's my co-host, Josh Knight.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a podcast rises from the ashes. We are alive.
We made it somehow against the odds. A year and a half break, a break longer than we were recording.
Yes, and now we're in two different states.
Yeah. So towards the end, I think you were preparing to move, right?
Yep.
To South Carolina by the end. And I would, I've since moved to Idaho. So totally different.
Idaho.
Totally different. I
don't know how that works. Fine.
Well, I mean, I guess for the listeners that somehow don't know what's going on with your life, but want to check in, how's it going, Josh? How about for me? Because we didn't chat too much before.
No. All right. So for listeners that we've had and that have returned, thank you. For potential new listeners, welcome. We are just two friends that are here to chat about games. But before we get into the games, we normally do a little banter section about our lives. So we'll keep it a little short and sweet for this one. I'm doing well. I very much enjoy my job down here in South Carolina. I've got a good network of friends that we've developed over the almost 2 years that we've been here now. And I'm playing quite a bit of golf, which makes me happy because that was something I was unable to do up in Charlottesville in Virginia. So now I actually get to play golf. I still am not very good at it, despite playing as much as I do. But things are well, and our kiddo is growing like a weed, which that's a new endeavor, being a dad for the first time.
Yeah, that's amazing that you're able to balance all of it. That's what takes a lot. Strong effort.
But not balance well. It's sort of like that old teeter-totter or seesaw. I feel like I might be stuck sometimes.
Like that.
It's not a lot of balancing.
You can balance while bouncing on a ball with a plate and a rake and a something else.
Yeah, nah. I make our son read all that stuff. Yeah.
That's awesome. And
what he does is just flip the book upside down, look at the pretty pictures, which coincidentally is what I do too. Let's be honest.
Yeah. I mean, that's why those books are so appealing, I think, for kids, right? It's like all the bright colors. And we went to the Universal. I think the Universal Studios has Dr. Seuss Land in Florida, at least. I don't know if they have it everywhere, but that.
I think it's only in Florida. I don't remember the one in Hollywood having it.
Yeah. But that like bright colors and stuff. They love Dr. Seuss Land, even though before that they hadn't really read a bunch of the books. But it's also, just child-centered area of the park. So,
yeah, good point. Well, how about you? Give us a quick update.
Yeah, so we moved out to Idaho for Nicole's first foray into big girl radiology, I guess. I don't know what you call it. I was trying to think of the actual word and then just dove right into some made up childlike sound. So we've been here since July. Summer was great. Okay. Winter made us kind of quickly realize, like, oof, maybe we should be living by family if we're going to be going through this winter weather, right? Like I don't know, we're not really cold winter sport people. Skiing, ice skating, sledding, all that. I mean, once a year is fun.
All that just sounds like torn ACLs, right? Let's be honest.
That's what they said. We went tubing last weekend, and that's what with two of the other radiologists who also went to UVA, so that's kind of been our friend network, which has been good. But anyway, so when we went tubing, that's what they're like, I don't know how we're doing this. Just like all the studies you read. It's like,
yeah.
He also has a trampoline in his backyard. Makes no sense. MSK train.
Is it? I was like, is it in line with the ground? Like you could have that trampoline. Yes,
it is. Yeah, it's the whatever built-in trampoline.
Yeah, it's so fancy. That one's not as bad.
But yeah, so it's been fun. It was an adventure, but we are going to be moving back to Michigan in late spring. Well, like right after Memorial Day, so early summer.
Okay, I've heard it's warm there.
Yeah.
2 days of the year.
Well, you know, they host the current national champions of NCAA. Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, until it's overturned.
Nope. One whole year. It's good.
Yeah, I mean, your coach is trying to renegotiate a contract that says when he's actually caught for cheating, they can't fire him.
No, yeah. he's leaving.
That's not suspicious at all.
They got their suspensions.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's... I mean, everybody knew for the whole last half of the season. You can't say that the players were not good at that point.
Yeah, so, I mean, they already know all the play calls. Everything's been recorded earlier in the year.
You don't plan. Anyways, we'll just move on because we're not going
to agree. We'll agree to disagree. Just like we're going to agree to disagree on our list. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
It's like Men's Warehouse.
Yeah. All right, so this has kind of been our starting point when we first started with episode one. So episode 2.1, we'll kind of give out a feel of where we're at, and we're kind of retooling the show a little bit too. I guess we should talk about
retooling,
that.
Retooling, yeah.
We're gonna try and simplify it, less editing, less prep work ahead of time. So I don't think we're gonna do the formal reviews as much, and we're gonna try and kind of, we did three parts to our episodes was our structure before. And so now we're kind of splitting each of those parts into their own episode is kind of the way we're going to try and do that. Make it.
Basically, it's just going to be two dudes having a good time talking about board games. And hopefully if we have an audience, great. If we don't, that's fine too. We just want to have a good time and share our joy for the hobby. And that's it. This is supposed to be a fun hobby. This isn't a job. We both have stressful jobs. Let's just have fun.
Yeah. And we could do it without just texting all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to tell Josh how dumb his opinion is on a game once in a while, face to face. It won't be today, though, because top 10s, you're not going to have any crappy games. You might say that.
Paleo is not going to be included. Paleo, Shipwreck Arcana, Legends of Andor.
Don't worry, they didn't make it.
You sure?
They didn't make it.
Okay, well, how about we dive in? I'm super curious to figure out the number 10.
All right. Number 10 on my list. Here's a good indicator that I did zero prep work. I don't have any of the designers or publishers prep this time. So, but
The last time we did this, you said, and designed or published by the designer, and kept going, and you were like, you did it like four or five times.
Yeah. Well, now we're doing it live, so I have to get it right or just be screwed.
Yeah.
So my number 10 is definitely a repeat from my more recent list. I don't know where it fell, but it would be One Night Ultimate Series. So I think it probably fell quite a bit. I don't remember exactly where it was, but I think it was probably in the top five by that back
then. I think it was either five or six, if I remember.
It's fallen a bit because we haven't found another good group to play it with, but I do have those memories and I do still know how good of a hit it is with me. I mean, Night Ultimate Werewolf, as a quick reminder, is kind of a social deduction game. Everybody gets a role for the round, and you can either be on Team Villager or Team Werewolf. If you're on Team Werewolf, you're trying to pretend to be a villager to not get caught. And if you're on Team Villager, you're trying to actually do the deduction and find out who is a werewolf. So there's usually some lying and misdirection involved and just trying to catch on to social cues. And so because of that, you can, if you play it with the same group too long, it can start to get old. And I think, five different expansions at this point, or like, not necessarily expansions, but they're standalone expansions, different versions of the game. Alien, werewolf, vampire, superheroes. Yeah. And so those kind of mix it up a little bit, but it can grow stale if it's the exact same group over and over and over. Okay. So, but yeah, it's when it does hit, it's like number one or number two. And so that's why it couldn't really fall off the list for me, because it's so high when it's high, but when it's not, it's not. So
what's your ideal player count?
Like 7 or 8
would be, because that's the other thing that makes it hard to table, is you need that many people, and you need that many people invested in the concept. If you have one or two that don't buy into it, it'll fall flat.
Right. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. And so if there's like one person, and it can kind of go okay, unless they're the werewolf that like 2 or 3 rounds in a row, then it gets, then it dies fast. But
exactly.
So yeah. But yeah, that's my number 10, One Night Ultimate, Ted Alsbach, the designer, Bezier Games.
There you go.
Bam. Got it.
You nailed it. So before I do my number 10, how many crossovers do you think?
Oh, how many crossovers will we have?
Because I'm not sure. I don't know if we're going to have any or not.
I think one.
Because I feel like...
Potentially.
You think one? Okay.
And
we'll see.
Yeah. I don't think it'll be as high for you as it is for me, but
okay. Well, we'll find out. I know one that's not a crossover. My number 10 game of all time is The Witcher Old World. It's a game that just came out this past year. So 2023 game designed by Lucas Wozniak. This is very, did you ever play The Witcher video game?
I
know anything about The Witcher world?
Yeah. I played the original Witcher, which is probably like the worst version of Witcher.
I think Witcher 3 was like the best video. I never played any of the video games. The only reason I got into this entire IP intellectual property was via the Netflix show.
Okay.
And I thought it was really interesting. They came out with this game on Kickstarter, and it's a adventure game with deck building and some like deterministic combat. It's kind of unique. It's a little bit of a lengthy game. I've played it solo, although I think it easily would play multiplayer too. It's gorgeous. The stories that it tells, there's like a stack of cards, probably I'd say 200 cards of just different stories. And after each turn, you flip over one of those cards and you read the story and be like, do you want to attack the goat or should you save the goat? And you, whatever decision you make, you get a boon or a curse. Okay. And that would kind of vary things up. And you're always buying cards every single round and all this stuff. It's brilliant. It's super fun. Like I said, they kind of threw everything in the kitchen sink into the Kickstarter because it's a Kickstarter. And the box is massive. It's super big. They have all these monsters, but it was done perfectly. It's one of those that you thought when the Kickstarter was ongoing, the crowdfunding campaign, I think they raised $10 million or close to it. They raised so much money. And you think they would just, it's sort of like a cash grab. It wasn't. Yeah. They actually developed a fantastic game behind this. This is a company that's made some good games, like some decent games in the past, nothing stellar. And as we currently said, it's rated 450th all time on BoardGameGeek, the website for kind of the quintessential website for board games. And 450th, and it just came out last year. That's pretty good considering it was Kickstarter only for a while before it eventually hit retail. So super fun game. I really like it. And that's The Witcher Old World.
Does that, how, like a lot of the adventure games have that two-phase setup, right? Where there's like the battle map and then there's the travel map. Is this one asynchronous like that, or is it one giant?
It's one giant. There's nothing
asynchronous.
So it's like the monsters.
It's like the video game.
Yeah, the monsters are roaming monsters, so they're in different towns and you can go interact with them. And if you have enough damage to defeat them, you can defeat them, but they're going to attack back. It's really neat. It's all based on card play.
Yeah.
It's not, the only dice is you play Witcher poker or like poker, whatever, something like that. And that's the only dice. That's the only randomness. A lot of this is truly deterministic, which is nice.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. That's, I feel, well, it's probably getting more common now. It's not a space that I'm in a lot, those adventure games, but that used to be hard to find, I feel like.
And like I said, with the cards you flip over, it sort of makes it like an RPG, a role-playing game, right? That's not who I was. back in Virginia. I like it some now. Imagine that. All right. Well, let's move on to number nine.
All right.
Are we doing snake?
Sure.
You want a snake?
You can snake. Yeah. Let's snake.
Yes. I love snake. All right. So my number nine game is a CMON game. And I didn't have any of this company's games on my previous two lists. But once I started playing these, they're probably pretty darn good. This one came out in 2020, Marvel United. Yeah, and it is designed by Andrea Chayefsky, and then the easier one is Eric Lang, who is famous from quite other games, probably most notably Blood Rage. But this is a Marvel game using these little weird figures that are chibis. Massive heads, very cartoony, and you think the game is cartoony because of the art style, and it's not. But it's also a lot of fun, meaning it's plug and play. You can take, hey, I want to grab She-Hulk, and I'll use Hawkeye, and I don't know, Wolverine. You can bring the X-Men into this. You just grab whatever heroes you want. You fight whatever boss you want. Maybe it's Blob. Maybe it's Red Skull. It doesn't matter. You just play against these guys, different little areas. Everything is unique between the characters that you control, between the villains. It's lovely. Super easy to learn. Probably games take maybe 30 minutes to play. I've done a bunch solo. I've played with Veronica. You can do multi-hand solo easily enough. I really like it. And they're coming out with more and more content here lately. It's fantastic. I think Marvel United, I was hesitant to begin with because of the art style. And I thought it was childish. And it turned out it wasn't childish. I made a big mistake. I should have played this game sooner. I love it. Number nine.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that with the art style. I think you passed on it the first Kickstarter or GameFound or whatever it was on because of that, right? But yeah, definitely gone in since then because I know I've seen you showed me the picture of the shelf. You're displaying them proudly now.
Yeah. It's even better. Our game room upstairs, I now have the art boxes nailed to the wall. Yeah, I'm a totally different person,
full on. That's awesome.
Yeah, great game. And like I said, if anybody is interested in this, they love Marvel, they love a fun cooperative game, you can get this on Amazon for $12. It's even sold in Walmart, of all places. You don't need to buy everything in the kitchen sink for this. It's out there. It does extend your play, but at the same time, $12 and you can enjoy this game.
Nice. All right. My number nine is also my last cheating. Where I'm just putting a series in. This is a crossover actually with your original list on the exact same position, and that would be the Clever series. Gonshon, okay. Doppelt, Clever Hulk Dry, and Clever Forever. I don't know if you probably didn't play it by that time. There's a fourth one.
No.
And the fourth one is pretty dang good, but I know you won't believe me. These ones are just, this is why I asked you before when I was making the list, like, is this about what you would play, what you would most want to play? And there's like some balance for me where I just know these games so well and the variations on them like provide enough of an interesting puzzle for me while still feeling comfortable to play it. I can just, and this is like the number one game, I think that, or at least most played game, if I include all four variations with Nicole's dad, and just like having those memories with people that are both gamers and like coming in to be gamers, family, like I've had this game played with any type of gamer. And that to me is why it stands up high. Cool. I know that 3 and 2 didn't go well for you.
No.
And that's okay. And 2 is not that I probably will never play 2 again, just given that I like 1, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
And that's totally fine. 1 is definitely the one we play the most. And then I think as of now, 4 is the second best. Sorry, I forgot to give a quick overview. In case you don't know, you go to Board Game Geek and look it up. It's you roll 5 dice. They all have different colors. You and you pick one, and then it lets you do some different trigger. And this is a bonus happy roll and write game, basically, like Yahtzee style. That was a terrible overview, and I was doing it just to check a box, basically.
Nah, you did fine. I just look, we have played this collectively, or at least recorded, 31 times.
Yeah. Gons, specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not going to... I can't argue. Like, I know the banter, the back and forth of being the disagreement, the good cop, bad cop. I can't disagree with you.
Yeah.
It's not a top 10 game for me, but it's also one of those... You when you play so many games, it's hard to put a roll and write in there. And that was the thing that's changed since that first one we did. I've played so many more games. I just couldn't keep it up there that high.
Yeah. I mean, and that's fine. I think this might not have been on any of my original lists, and it's climbed up because these are the types of games I'm playing mostly now.
Yeah.
Especially
the 15, 20 minute games.
Yeah. And one thing I didn't mention, so we have That's Pretty Clever Kids. Mm-hmm. And that has gone really well with our kids. They That's don't all get the strategy, but they, 100% is kind of a lie. But the 7 and 5 year old, they get it. Like, they know, they roll the dice, they pick one, they get it. And that is good enough to me that, like, Nicole and I can play a game, kind of. It's not like super intriguing, but we can be playing a game and they are just playing along, not really getting the strategy, but they feel like they're a part of it. And that game is the closest we've gotten to anything like that. So
it's good. I mean, one of your kiddos loves dice after all.
Yeah.
All right then. Well,
all right.
Number 8.
All right. My number 8, the last of my really light ones that have been taking the flavor of my current life. And that would be Mysterium, which I don't think has been on the list before. Maybe it has. No?
It has not.
So we played that a couple times over the holidays, which is probably gave it a recent bump in my opinion on it. But I will say Mysterium probably needs about 4 or 5 players. Mysterium is somewhat of a spin on Clue. There's one person who's a ghost, and they have been murdered. And everyone else is a psychic who's going to try, or whatever, the people who go do a seance to speak to the ghosts. They show up at the house, and so that's what the characters are. And so the ghost tries to give you, they give you cards to try and help you guess what the room was that the murder happened in, who did it, and then what weapon did they use. So just like Clue in that sense, except there's no moving around the board. And if you've played Dixit, the cards are like that. It's this really fantastical art. Like, some of it is dark, some of it's bright and cheery, some of it's whimsical. It's a bunch of different variations, and the ghost person can't talk, so it can be frustrating at times, but it's also kind of fun. Like, it, I mean, all I like deduction, if that hasn't ever been clear to any original listeners. I really like trying to figure out how people are thinking, and this strikes that for me, and in a cooperative way. Yeah, really fills scratches those holes. That itch.
Yeah, all the other really weird sayings we used to say.
It scratches those holes.
Oh gosh. What about, just talk about kiddos with That's Pretty Clever? Have you played Mysterium Kids?
No, I have not played Mysterium Kids.
Okay.
Do want to get my hands on that. I don't think they're at that age yet, but I think I think that, and what, there's like My First Ticket to Ride and My Little Scythe. I think those are all going to be
My First Stone Age.
Yeah.
There's now a new Quacks of Quedlinburg kids version.
That might actually be a good one, because that is probably a pretty simple.
It's not Count Your Chickens.
It's not Count Your Chickens. We still have
keep trying to, I need to find that for myself, not for our son, but for me.
All right, yeah, so Mysterium, it gets in on being a fairly fully cooperative and deduction.
Yeah,
big hit for me.
Well, my number 8 is going to be a game that's been on the list since the beginning, and that's Teotihuacan. City of Gods. Originally came out in 2018, designed by Daniel Tassini and solo mode by Dave Turchi. Last time, I think it was roughly the same position. Might have been number 7, I can't remember. But it's always been right here. It's a fantastic game. The one thing I remembered from the last top 10 was I hadn't yet to play the expansion that offered the Obsidian, which was the Wild. I played that. I ended up playing that 6 times.
Yeah, you like that one?
I loved it.
Yeah,
I kept playing it because it was also the second expansion that offered the asymmetric powers. I kept getting more and more of those asymmetric people, and I'm like, ooh, I like this one. I can't wait to try that one next, or I'm going to use this. And I just kept playing and playing and playing because every time I played, I got faster at it. So instead of a game taking 2.5 hours, I don't have, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's a good sweet spot for how meaty, how involved this is. It was perfect. And the fact that during the eclipse phases, those were good stopping points. So I could stop the game, go to bed, or, you know, whatever it might have been, I could come back to it and pick it up. So I just kept playing it a bunch. So I really like this game. It's fantastic. So Teotihuacan, for people that have never heard it before, it's a dice placement game with a rondel, which means it's a circular kind of action thing that you can move these dice workers around. And what's neat about it is your workers, the dice themselves are never rolled. The pip value on the die is the strength of the worker. So a 1 level is going to be a small child, and a level 6 is a elder who gets a lot of stuff. And the action you take with that die is dependent on the strength. So really neat game. It's definitely remains the favorite of the T series, although I am learning Tabanusi as we record right now. I still think I'm going to love Teotihuacan above everything else. Solken is neat, just no solo mode. So my number 8, Teotihuacan.
Nice. Yeah, did you back the deluxe version on this one or no?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, this I was very close to, but got a no vote. That's okay.
Yeah, I probably didn't need to back as much as I did, but it's a top 10 game. It's always going to be a top 10 game. That's when you splurge.
Yep.
It's calculated splurges.
For sure. I mean, and that's
is that going to be a new phrase? Calculated splurges? Oh, God, we're going to hell. It.
Put that in the bank. All right.
All right. Number 7. So number 7 for me is a new game that came out in 2022. It was a Kickstarter game. It was in the comparison with a bunch of other games, which may or may not be spoken of later. It's a game called Endless Winter Paleo Americans, designed by Stan Kordonsky. So this game, it's a deck builder worker placement game. Now again, just remember that phrase. You might hear it again later. It's set in, guess what? Paleo-American era. The actions themselves, there's a lot of different stuff. It almost seems like they had too many things built into this game with you could go to this area, you go to that area. It felt like it was too much. It felt like it was disjointed until you play it. So when you're learning the game, you're like, none of this is going to make sense. And then you play it, you're like, oh, you get to do this action, which does this action, which triggers this. And all of a sudden I've got this and you've got this card, which allows you to do that. It was fantastic. I loved it. I've played with some of the expansion material that I got via the Kickstarter, not all of it just yet, but it's clean. It's a fun game. And of course it has the Misho artwork. So I always dig that.
Yeah. Well, can you hear me? Sorry.
Yes.
I felt like my audio dropped. This one is on my shelf waiting to get played. You recommended this one off of Arnak, and I think Dune is kind of that same style game, right? Yeah. And with the great theming of paleo to boot, I mean, it's just
paleo. Oh.
No, yeah, this one seems good. And he's got another game, right? That just it was either coming to Kickstarter soon or just Kickstarted or something.
You're talking about Stan Kordonsky?
Yeah. There was something else.
So Stan he has his own publishing arm now, or his own publishing company. He came out with a game called Resurgence and then Nova Roma.
Nova Roma, that's what you just sent me a picture of that. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. I like Nova Roma. It originally was in my top 10, but then fell out when I did some reshuffling and whatnot. But also a fantastic game.
Alrighty. My number 7, where we start to get into the tried and trues for me. I'm a man of tradition as, what's his name? The Fiddler on the Roof guy. Why am I forgetting his name? I can picture him exactly.
I know you're trying all this like nice stuff. I'm saying calculated splurges.
Tevye. Tradition. Number 7. Grand Austria Hotel.
No way.
Yeah, couldn't come off the list. It almost did, and then I just could. There was no way, so I had to redo the list because it just didn't make sense. That was not right.
Throw the entire list out.
This list is garbage. Redo it. I'm liking Grand Austria next time. Grand Austria Hotel. This was the first, I guess, if you tech you well second. Euro game we played, first Euro game that I bought from what's the shop in Richmond, One Eye Jacks.
Yeah,
I bought it in the Ding and Dent, $30, and it'll that version will stay in my collection forever because of the position it holds in my heart. So Grand Austria,
in your top 10.
and in my top 10, which is my brain. So Grand Austria Hotel is designed by Simone Luciani, Virginio Gigli, kind of the Italian trio. There might be a third one. Flaminio Brasini might be in this one. I don't remember.
I mean, usually there's three Flaminio. In a trio.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sorry.
It's like those Neapolitan are, those ice are, cream.
Those are the three. I'm just not sure if all three were in this game. They're not all three always together. But they're always from the same publisher house. Usually,
I and they're say a fun always. Threesome.
Yeah, they are a fun threesome. But enough about the game. Let's talk about the designers. I did that on purpose. I'm not actually that dumb. Grand Austria Hotel. Enough said. It's a dice drafting game. So you roll 2 times the number of dice as there are players, plus one or something like that. And the dice correspond to different actions that are either get pastries or cakes, get wine or coffee, which you're trying to serve to guests that are at your restaurant. And then after they're at your restaurant, you're trying to put them into a hotel. And so one of them is get money. One of the dice is get money. One of the dice is prepare rooms. One is hire staff. And the other one's wild. And so other one being numbers 1 through 6. Sorry. basically you're just trying to consistent. Do the best job. Yeah, you're just trying to do the best job you can at filling up them holes. Okay. All right. Moving on from that travesty of a description.
Yeah. Now we're gonna get off of that to number 6.
Number 6 will be an absolute atrocity in the minds of Josh 2.0, but will be, I think, without ever having a conversation with him, agreed upon by Josh too. And that would be Marrakesh, number 6. Stefan Feld, one of his newest from the Queen City Collection. This, I don't know, this just hit us at the right time and the right...
Hit you in the right area.
It doesn't have to be bad. Why you gotta think about it like that? I'm starting to realize that actually nothing we said is bad, and it's just your mind. It's just where it goes.
Yeah, it's phrasing. Like watching Archer.
Yeah. So Marrakesh is a cube tower. So I don't remember. You have, I think, 9 different colored. They're called keshis. They're little hexagons. You pick out 3. It might be 12 actually, because I think there's 4 rounds. So you pick out 3 colors that you want to drop. The colors correspond to different actions you can do around your board, which are, it's not really relevant. It's like grow dates, go fishing, build gates. River. Yeah, yeah. Go explore the desert.
It's like a bunch of stuff.
Semi-thematic things. Not really.
No.
But yeah, that puzzle just... at four players especially, we really loved it. We didn't find there was a lot of downtime in our play group. I don't know how it was for you. But we appreciated that. And I've heard, I don't know from, because obviously it's not come out, but that the expansion also speeds up the game and kind of balances it out a little bit, where when you get screwed with a certain color, I think there's like a race or something you can do now. And so your unused colors just go to furthering this one track that gets a bunch of bonuses or something. So that is supposed to help, but that was only if it's like a minor problem for you. If it's a major problem, I don't remember what your issues were with it. That it was
failed. Mine was, it was unbalanced. Player order mattered too much. So in the first round, I didn't get anything. Like the first three people, I was number four. The first three got double actions, and I got one of an action I didn't want. And it was, the entire game was me playing catch up. I think I came in second. Like, I played what felt like a really solid game, but that first round just put me so far down. It was like in a pit. I stumbled coming out of the gate, and it wasn't because I made a mistake. Luck ruined it. And I don't want that much luck in a Euro game that should be strategic.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I think Stefan Feld definitely does have a lot of tactical, like, he's not, like, Uwe is more of a strategic Euro designer, and I think Feld, that's why I like Felds, is that I feel like they're a little more tactical. But
yeah,
I do understand that.
All right.
So that's my number six, Marrakesh.
My number six is the only, I don't know, this might be a crossover. I feel like it's not. It's also been on my list every single time, and it's Paladins of the West Kingdom, which is designed by Sam McDonald and Shem Phillips. Fantastic game, huge Euro game where you have a bunch of these little meeple figures. They're all different colors. They all have different abilities, and you're utilizing them on these action boards in order to gain more resources, which then allows you to get more meeples that then get you more resources. And it's just this cascading effect. It's really neat. I've played it with the expansion. I've played it 15 times, which is a substantial increase since even the first time we did the top 10. But even since then, I've played it a bunch. I really enjoy it. It's another one of those that it feels like it'll take you a couple hours to play through it. And then once you get the swing of things, you just can bang out a session pretty quickly.
Yeah, this is, I don't know if it's the only one in that series, but it is one of the few Euros that I have played solo. I did try this one solo, and it's pretty, for a not solo player, it was pretty good. Although I had like a month where I was trying a lot of stuff solo right after I did that Arnak campaign.
Yeah. It's a great game. This is a great game. I've been singing its praises.
This is a great game.
I can't say anything bad about it. I really enjoy it, and it's the best of the Garpil, which is the publishing arm. It's the best game that they've done, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, fantastic game. Before we get on to number five, I figure we're going to give a quick little shout out to our sponsor, who's our unofficial sponsor. I noticed on your shirt, you've got a Roback, which coincidentally, I am also wearing a Roback shirt. So the unofficial sponsor of Meeple Knight 2.0 is not ginger beer. It's going to be Roback and bourbon.
Roback.
One of us is drinking bourbon. We'll let the listeners guess who that is.
If you'd like a 10% off coupon for Roback, go to their website, enter your email address, and hit subscribe to their newsletter, and you can have 10% off.
Yeah, or if you're military, I think it's 20%.
Yeah, that's new. Yeah, that or new-ish, because I did notice that on my Christmas order that I got that now. Not that I've ordered it enough to know that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they had the Black Friday sale. I bought quite a bit of stuff, which coincidentally, they don't have an Idaho shirt.
They do not.
They might have a Michigan shirt, but they definitely have South Carolina.
They do. I tried to buy that shirt before going down for the dinner for the interview at the group when we went down there. But it was out. So that was the pineapple shirt that I bought. I bought that instead. And I wore that.
So
anyways, back from our commercial.
I know. From our unofficial sponsor. My number five game, I think it's going to surprise you because I don't know if I've ever talked to you about it. I might have in past. Man. It's another CMON game. See, the wheels are turning in there. So this is Massive Darkness 2, Hellscape.
No, I don't think you have. Nope. I was trying to think shows like Ankh or whatever. But those are all like social, so I wouldn't think.
Yep. Sorry, so this one, you can solo it, but I actually have yet to solo it. I played it with my good friend Matt. We really enjoyed it. So this game is a dungeon crawler. So you got it can be one-off scenarios. You can do a campaign. We just did the one-off scenarios. But you've got a character. Every character is unique. So you might have a ranger, and that ranger has a deck of cards that's a push-your-luck mechanism. You might have a wizard who uses mana in order to maximize his spells. Every single game character has a different mini game, and there are, because it's a Kickstarter, there was like 16 or 20 of them. There's a whole slew of these characters. I have played through a couple of them. I like the shaman that you can actually change out from your character to an eagle, a bear, or a raccoon. I mean, who doesn't like being a coon? And each of those animals has like different abilities. It's neat. And meanwhile, all the while, you're going through a dungeon, you're fighting a bunch of monsters that you can just beat up on. It's not like one big baddie that you have to fight. You're just slowly hacking through a bunch of these people. And every time you get through a group of them, you get a victory. So you get a card that they were holding, and all of a sudden that's a new weapon or new armor or whatever it might be, and all of a sudden you're a ranger that has a spear, or you're a paladin that has a bow and arrow. Like, it's super cool. You never know what you're going to be while you're playing it, and all of a sudden you look at it and be like, ooh, this pairs well with this. Ooh, this is a cool combo. And all of a sudden you're rolling like 15 dice. It's just a huge dice chucker. It's so much fun. It's stupid fun, right? We work hard. I like the fact that I can just mindlessly play this. There's a few rules you got to make. Oh, we forgot that rule. I forgot that. And at the end of the day, you're like, I don't care. We had a good time.
Yeah.
And Matt and I really enjoyed it. I've played it 8 times with him. And every single time, we were like, loving it. So, fantastic game. That's Massive Darkness 2 Hellscape, designed by Alex Onatanu and Marco Portugal. There you go. Not published by.
Yeah, you're crushing those. I don't even know if I've named my designers for all of them.
Well, just the threesome.
Yeah, just the threesome. No, I think I said Stefan Feld too.
Yeah, you did.
Man. No, that's the purpose. That's why we do this, right? Having fun. Yep. So that sounds like it. I mean, I can just tell from your voice.
My. Cool. It's stupid fun.
All right. So my number five, actually, quick look, top five, nothing. There's one new game from here on out for me to the top 10 list. So they're not all same top five, but here we go. So number five is a classic for me as well, due to family shared memories and experiences. That would be Roll for the Galaxy.
I wanted to be like Rummy Cube.
Rummy Cube. He said Ruh. No, Roll for the Galaxy, designed by Tom Lehman and someone else, Alex Way, or I don't remember the name.
Nobody gives credit to the other person. I think it's just Tom Lehman.
So this is a dice version of Roll for the Galaxy, or the dice version of Race for the Galaxy. You roll dice that have different symbols on them, and basically you can settle planets, conquer planets, grow things on planets, trade things from planets, everything from planets. It's all about planets. So this one's fun for me because you get this galaxy, empire, republic, whatever style government together, trade republic. Union. And then you kind of can tell this story about it. And that's really fun for me. And then having done this for a while, we played with her family like 3 years in a row. Maybe it was only 2 years in a row. And then we brought it out 1 year. And I don't remember who it was. Somebody's like, oh, that looks fun. We've never played that before. We're like, are you kidding me? I literally talked about this on the podcast that I love that we play this with you guys every year you come down. So now it's especially ingrained. It has been a while. I think it's been about 2 years since I've played it now, unfortunately. But that does not reflect in top 10 status to me, because I rarely play things more that often anyways as repeats right now.
Yeah.
So a lot of it's living in my brain, but in my memory. But yeah, Roll for the Galaxy.
Number five. It's a fun game. I've played it solo. Somebody created a solo variant for it, which was a lot of fun. Nice. I want to introduce it with Veronica. I think she would like it. She likes rolling dice. She likes that push and lock type mechanism. So I think at some point I'll introduce it to her, but not yet. And
you had Race, right? You can play that solo, Race for the Galaxy?
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the expansions introduced that as a dedicated solo, which was, it was fine. I liked it. I think I played it like 6 times or something like that. Because it was another one of those. You just bang out a bunch of games back to back to back. It was enjoyable. Hadn't tabled it. Not
memorable.
That was probably a year and a half ago. I felt like that was soon before we left
Virginia. I do think you need the other people playing. Even like at 2, I don't think it sings that well. Because you need enough people to kind of be trying to guess what other people are going to activate or not.
Yeah, versus the dice game, sounds like it plays better at 2. At least that's what Rado says.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, then number 4.
All right, my number 4, the second appearance by Herfeld today, and that would be the Castles of Burgundy. Castles of Burgundy is definitely one that I have played. Again, if I don't play it in person, I'd have played it on the computer multiple times, either on Bwana Show or on Steam. I like pretty much all implementations of it. We did play we played the card game and we played Castles of Tuscany since I've last talked to you. I mean, they are both good, and I do agree that they actually both feel kind of similar to me. In that they shrink it down and make a similar experience in 30 to 45 minutes, which is good. But to me, it's a similar experience. It's not the whole experience that I like that I get from Castles of Burgundy. And I probably would end up playing those more with newer players than I would Castles of Burgundy. But when I play it online, I just remember how much I love that game.
And yet you haven't gotten the Awakened Realms Super Deluxe.
I do have it. I just don't have it.
You haven't played it.
Yeah. Well, I've been told we're not opening anything till we move back to Michigan. So it remains in shrink.
You wear the pants in the family.
No. Oh, heck no. I'm in shorts. Pants are straining. to whatever the explosive spurges or whatever the thing was that you said.
Controlled splurges. Well, I have to admit, this is another one. So I'm not a big fan of Steffenfeld. I've liked some of his games. The Rome one that we played. Not Trajan. What was the other one?
Carpe Diem.
Carpe Diem. I like that. And then this one was good too. I played the new super sweet deluxe version. I really liked it. Some of that was just the fact that the components elevated the game. But I think the game itself is fantastic. I really liked it. And then the dice game is enjoyable. We'll play that every once in a while. We've got like a little photo box that we put a bunch of our roll and writes and like small card games in. So that one gets pulled out enough. One of those, hey, we're going to go to the brewery or whatever. We can play it. It's good. I can't argue with you on that one.
Oh man, you have
it's not on my list.
You're right.
That's not a crossover.
I don't expect any Felds on your list.
No.
And I think in about 5 years you'll expect my entire list to probably just be Felds. He'll have made absolutely. Enough games. He's made like 80 games, and so if I have three now, so I mean eventually it's gotta
I think be. The only way more Felds make it on your list though is they have to get away from Queen as a publisher.
Yeah, I do it's think just, that yeah, Marrakesh was an exception to me that
exception, not the rule.
Yeah, not the rule, yeah.
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 Well, mine, this is might be a crossover, but it might not. It's another deck builder and worker placement. Da 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 da. We reviewed it on the channel.
Arnak.
Lost Ruins of Arnak, designed by Elwyn and Min. And it's a great game. This is one that the deck building isn't necessarily as strong as some others. It's more of a worker placement game that happens to have deck building within it. It's a lot of fun. The second expansion is a necessity because that adds the unique player powers, which last time we did the recording, I did not have that expansion just yet. I ended up playing that one. I played each character. I think there's, what? I want to say four in that box.
In the base box, yeah. Or, I mean, in the...
Are the yeah,
yeah
the, four or six. I can't remember.
Six. I think it's six. Yeah.
I played them all twice. Yeah. I loved it. I really, really enjoyed it. That's a necessity. You got to have that expansion. The base game is enjoyable, but I had played it so much, especially when I was playtesting that solo campaign, which now that solo campaign, I think, is in the second expansion with mm-hmm. two more characters. It's great. I really enjoy Lost Ruins of Arnak. I can't speak too ill of it, but there is something better than it that also does worker placement and deck building. Sadly. So moving into number three. And of course, right above it is Dune Imperium. The Dune Imperium is designed by Paul Denon. This one is a board game version of the Dune universe. I didn't know anything about Dune before I watched the movie. I really love the movie. And they use sort of movie still type style. Like it's still artistic, but it's the characters from the movies that they put in this. Fantastic. This thing has spawned two expansions. I have yet to play with the second expansion. And then all of a sudden now there's a standalone game called Dune Uprising that has the big sandworms. But I love it. So this one, I would argue, is just as much of a deck builder as it is a worker placement. And that's why it gets the nod from me. I like the deck building within this. I got a big old stack of cards. It's wild what cards will come up. There are certain strategies that I personally enjoy, but I've played it solo a bunch of times. And I also played it with one of my friends here in the group. So we played, our first game was with the expansion, and then he barely beat me with an intrigue card. He was like, "Whoa, nope, you lose," because we were just neck and neck the entire time. And then we ended up playing again most recently just the base game, and that when I realized this guy knows what he's talking about, he's good. So I decided to rush the end of the game quickly, and it was the only way I could beat him, because it was one of those, I could see how he was building his engine. He had a great set of cards that he had purchased. I knew he was going to kick my butt, so I rushed it. I did a couple of battles to get a couple of victory points, and it just kind of snowballed that I moved up these tracks. I got some more victory points, and in one turn, I think I got 3 or 4 points, which triggered the end of the game. And even though he came close, I still kind of manipulated the system a little bit. I really love it. This one's much... Again, I've got three deck builder work replacement games in my top 10. It's a mechanism I enjoy, and I can't complain, but Dune Imperium is definitely the best of the three.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say when I heard you say that Arnak was not the best of them. It's like, oh, well, I know that that's in there, and I know that that is your cup of tea for sure. I mean, and those are not like new games, right? I mean, they're newish, but they've been around for at least a year or two each now at this point. I mean, Arnak,
both of them came out in 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, they've been around. These are like 4 years old now. Jeez. three and some change because they came out around SN. Yeah.
Yeah, they came out late in the year.
Yeah.
And I had no interest in either of them when it first came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's how I felt about Arnak, and you put me onto it, so. All right, my number three is the last appearance for Herfeld today.
Bruges. It's
Bruges. Hey-o. It can never fall. I love Bruges forever. Nicole's mad at me. She thinks Marrakesh is way better than Bruges. She's wrong. That's fine.
She has poor taste.
I don't think you've played Bruges either, right? Since our reviews, or well, we didn't review Bruges, sorry, since our top tens, played the new version. Hamburg is the redo with Queen. I am glad that I made the decision I did, which was to just suck it up and spend that money on buying an old copy of Bruges instead of buying the new version of Hamburg. I don't like the remake. I do specifically like Bruges. It is because there's randomness though. So I think you might like, despite the art, might like the gameplay better of Hamburg because there's five different colored cards and in Bruges, they're all shuffled into two different decks, but you draw from whichever deck and then you get what color you get. Like you don't get to choose which color. In the new version, they separate it. Each color has its own deck. So you can specifically build your strategies based on like, oh, I need this color card right now. I'm going to this pile. Yeah. And that I was listening to our original top 10 today and I stand by it. What I like about Bruges is that sometimes I have to take a card that I'm like, oh, I really don't want this. Or like it's the second best option. So I'll take it, I guess. And then I flip it up. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. This is going to be so much better. Yeah. Like, whereas if I'm going down a route and like Hamburg just feels more like you're down a strategy and you do it and just execute it as good as you can. And Bruges has that tactical feel of like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I mean, it does happen that things suck sometimes and you have to make it's rare that you're going to draw five cards that all suck, but it can happen. And I have seen it happen, just not to me. So that's why it's
okay. Yeah, I would play it. I think it's come to the point now. I understand some of these games are really good. I would play them. I just don't need to own them.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's the good thing about the longer you've been in the hobby, the more you realize kind of what are your style games and what aren't, and you'll play stuff because one of your friends wants to play it, but doesn't mean it's your style and that it's exactly what you want, but you're not always going to play your number one game. Speaking of which,
but we'll roll on to our number two game. Number two.
All right. My number two game, which at one point would have been a crossover, but I am fairly confident is not a crossover on our list. That would be Frost/Gloomhaven. Because I just don't, no, but I don't feel like it's on your list anymore.
Maybe.
We'll see. The power of Gloomhaven was just bringing the same playgroup back over and over and seeing my characters change. I mean, you know, all of the going through the dungeon crawl story experience, but also having battles that were card driven and felt a good combination or mostly strategic with a little bit of tactics, like field tactics, but not, oh my gosh, I need to do five damage, roll the dice. Oh, I did one damage. It's like, if you thought you were doing five damage, you have a set of cards that tell you, you have a 1 in 20 chance you'll miss, but otherwise you're probably doing 4 to 7 or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
Frosthaven. We started, I think we got about 10 scenarios in before we left for Idaho, and then we've played 3 or 4 remotely. So we figured out how to make it work. It's not perfect because it's a lot of game to set up and then do over. Like, we have a overhead cam that we display for the map, and then we display ourselves, and then we play. Like, I don't know. So it's not perfect, but we make it work and we're slowly progressing through. And if I'm willing to put that much hassle into a game, then I know it's got to be at the top. And I know there was a lot of hoopla, and I actually don't follow it that much, so I just play the game for the games. And so I do know some of the story, but I've decided that I just want to play the games, so I'll just leave those out.
Yeah. So right now, not Genji Red, but like, do you think it's going to be a crossover?
Do I think there's that is going to be a crossover?
Yeah.
See, I'm so torn because I want to explain myself first. One, Gloomhaven specifically has to hold a special place in your heart, I think.
It does.
In what it did for you in coming into the hobby, you played it at least twice through. Your metric of if someone asked you to play it, you would play it right now is what makes me question. I don't know. If it's on, it's original Gloomhaven specifically, but I don't think it's on.
Mm.
In my head, I'm going
to say it is not. It is not. I've specifically downloaded Steam in order to play the digital version. I started playing some of it and I realized I just don't like it anymore. Yeah. It's just not who I am. It's one of those, it's too much work for what I get out of it, which isn't as much anymore. I'd rather play something stupid fun like Massive Darkness 2, where I'm just rolling a bunch of dice and there's so much silly stuff. And it's one of those, I'd rather do that. Or if I'm going to invest in a dungeon crawl, like that type of experience, I have Oathsworn upstairs, which apparently is amazing. And I don't know. I think I'm over it.
That's fair. I mean, it's also, I think, what, a 2017 game? And so, and even Frosthaven is built on that model, right? Like, it doesn't completely reinvent it. It's still a 2017 style game, right? Like, in all the chits and everything, you need to have an app to make any of this actually like function. When the original Gloomhaven came out, I think it was $120. Frosthaven was like $225 to get the actual playable version. So, I mean, it's not the same as it was.
No. But, and it's, you just don't have the time. That's a huge time investment. I just don't have it. It can't be in my top 10, sadly.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fine.
But you know what isn't in the top 10? More one Euro point. Resource management games. Next one being Dwellings of Elderville by Luke Laurie.
Oh, nice.
Which I feel like an idiot because our last top 10, I said we 100% are going to play this game before we leave. We never did.
Womp womp.
We never had Meeple Night Con 2. We never did it. I feel dumb. I really enjoyed this game. This is one of those, after I finished my board examination years ago, this was the first game I pulled out to play. This was my reward after passing that completing that test. And it's another worker placement game, but what's neat is, unlike games like Concordia, where you play things and then you take part of your turn to retrieve, what was the other one? Aquatica did that too. A couple of these games do this unique feature. Like your turn, it's just a dead turn. Hey, we got to pull everything back. Dwellings of Eldervale takes that. Hey, pull everything back and put stuff on your cards that you've purchased, that you've acquired, or onto your player board. And that allows you to upgrade pieces or to do this, to get this resource that converts it into this. There's so many different little intricacies. There are 16 unique factions. All of them play highly different, but they seem like they're balanced. AI was easy to run. I've yet to play it multiplayer. I want to. I've suggested it to friends who just never pulled it out yet. But it's a fun game. It's a big behemoth. It has stupid monster sound bases, which is the dumbest thing ever. You know what? I don't care. I like it.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we did just get Nicole's schedule for the summer. in. So we are 100%. We are going to Origins. So
nice. If,
so we can make it happen. We'll just take over all of Origins, call it Meeple Night Con 2, and be like, bam, we did it. Look at all of our...
Listen. We did it.
Are you here for Meeple Night Con as well?
Yes. I have a higher draft pick. We haven't done ours yet. I have a higher draft pick, so I think I should be able to lock that in.
Yeah.
So, so. Meeple Night
awesome.
In-person reunion,
yeah.
And it's going to be great. Because guess what? Yeah. We might play our number one games, but I know we won't play mine. Sadly, you've played my number one game of all time.
Well, I think it's Too Many Bones, but
it's absolutely Too Many Bones. Yeah. There's just too many of them.
Yeah.
And this is another one. I play tested the snot out of this thing for their most recent campaign on GameFound. I just love it. It's stupid slapstick humor. You pull out a card and it says like put 16 dice down on a chip and move that chip across the neoprene playmat, and if nothing falls off you get to use 16 dice for your first attack on your first turn next round. It's just stupid, right? But it's so much fun. This game is highly asymmetric. Everyone has different characters that they utilize. They just came out with brass mag figures for the characters, which is still over the top. It's a silly game. It's a role-playing game, which you think I wouldn't like, because you heard me go through 100 or what, I guess eight essentially Euro games. I loved it though. I don't care. This is a fun game. The story is fun. I can do one-offs. I've done my full campaign. I've tried a bunch of different characters. It's enjoyable. It's not for everybody. I understand that. One, price, but two, just there's some investment to it. It's a fantastic company. This is Chip Theory Games, and they continually put out high-quality products, and this is their flagship for a reason.
Nice. We played this together. This might have been the first game we played together. I don't know if it was the first. It was early on.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah.
It was one of the first games you played at my house.
That's what I meant. Yes. I know it's not the first game we played together. Yes. Sorry. That is what I meant. This is a fun game. I never gave it enough time. I think you need to own it, or like I needed to come over more than once a week to really get the dividends out of this game. But someday maybe. Also, I'm only giving you credit for 7 Euro games. I'm not counting The Witcher, Marvel United, Too Many Bones. I'm also not counting Massive Darkness, so that's 6. How dare you?
So Massive Darkness is not a Euro game. Marvel United definitely is.
What?
It's
maybe
there's
I don't
resources.
Know what it is. That
yeah, there's resources.
My gosh. Yeah, whatever. It's not.
That's not a Ameritrash rolling dice and all this stuff. And same thing with The Witcher. Witcher is resources. The resources are your cards.
Yeah, I just don't think that resource management alone makes a Euro. To be discussed at a later date. For now,
yeah, we'll see about that.
What we'll discuss is my number one, which I don't know. Can you guess it? Might be able to. I think it's the same.
Spirit Island.
Yeah, baby. Spirit Island stays at the top. If it wasn't at the top, then it's at the top now.
it was at the top on our most recent one.
Yeah.
Our number ones did not change, unlike Dice Tower this year.
Yeah. It's designed by Eric Royce. The Greater Than Games is the publisher. The idea is kind of colonization, but the roles are reversed in that the players are spirits who are trying to repel the invaders. You're not playing the invaders who are conquering the lands. And so everybody is a spirit who has different powers. You start with, I think, 4 or 5 powers, and throughout the game you can gain different ones that can be minor powers or major powers. Major powers cost a lot of resources, as you would say, which makes this a Euro game. This is a Euro game. And so, I just love the theme of this. I love getting those It's just like the Bruges feeling. Picking up those four cards of what I get to pick for my next power and then seeing like, oh, how could I combo this? Oh, this would be so cool. Or this would, like, I need this right now. And as cool as this would be, do I want to sacrifice exactly the icons I need to make my powers work all the time so I can do this one thing I need to do right now? And just making those kind of decisions and it being co-op in a heavy enough way that you could have an alpha gamer if somebody really knew everything by heart and had an easy spirit for themselves. But for the most part, there's so much going on. Everybody's dealing with their own crap and you can't. You can just remember like one or two cards that other people have. Be like, can you play this one card that you played like three turns ago and was perfect for me? And they're like, yeah. Or no, this is my turn, not your turn. Anyway. Spirit Island, I love it. This was the one that I thought could potentially be a crossover. I didn't think it would be high on your list. I thought it might be one of the lower top tens, but
I liked it.
I
think we've officially rated it 8.9, so it's not even in the nines for me. There's quite a few games that are between it and my top 10. I liked it. I really did.
Yeah. All right. Any special thoughts, considerations, other things you wanted to talk about on your list?
No.
Honorable mentions.
That's I think it's interesting to see your top 10 is roughly unchanged other than your top, your
like 8, 10, 9, 8, and 10. Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of that.
And Marrakesh.
It's got bumped up there. Alchemist dropped off of yours.
Yeah. I would say when I was thinking about comparing, I think yours reflects more. I mean, you are still actively playing a lot, especially compared to me. And so it makes more sense to me that yours would still be fluid because you're still having changes into how they feel. You also play a lot more solo than I do. And so I think for you, gameplay and like what's happening on the board matters more than to me, because a lot of the things that when I've described them or when I was listening to my top tens is like the things that other people have done or like the interactions with people are what brings things into top tens, and then those are just hard to move out because now it's just living in my memory, and like the longer it sits there and it just like cements down into a position. Whether that's true or not,
and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think I play games with a variety of people like more different than you do.
Yes,
because I've got people that I can play a complex super heavy game with. I have somebody that's close to that. I also have, like last night, we played with our neighbors. We played Telestrations. We were debating between Dixit and Telestrations, but we've got that. I've got Veronica she's starting to get a little bit heavier in some of her games. We've played Mystic Veil 4 times this week alone, I think, 4 or 5. Oh, wow. She just wants to she wanted to play it tonight. And she keeps wanting to do that. And then obviously I've got my own solo. So upstairs, I've got 2 solo games set up. But I'm fortunate enough, I bought a gaming table when we came here. So I've got 2 different games set up upstairs. And depending on what mood I'm in, if I want a heavier, I play the heavier game. If I want a lighter, I'm going to play the lighter game. So
that's true. Yeah.
It just kind of depends on my mood. So I think my tastes have changed so much because I have that variety of a group. And I describe it to people. Right now, I'm a curator. I'm the Pandora of games. I like sending people, hey, check these 3 games out. I don't care if we don't play them. Just tell me what you like or what you don't like about them, and I can continue to curate. So I can know what game works well for you. With one of my buddies, we played Onitama. He loved it. So now I know he likes that type of abstract strategy games, which is something I have in my collection that I haven't played, because the only person I would have done with that before was Mike, who was featured on the podcast a while ago that played Clank Legacy with. I would have played that game with him. I don't have him down here. So I've got a new guy that I can play those type of games. So I think that's the one thing that changed me so much in my list was I have new playing partners.
Yeah.
Which sounds also weird to say that, playing partners. But yeah, a lot of stuff has changed. And I think that's what was a good way to encapsulate this first episode back as we bring the podcast back into our lives and bring that joy that we had before that might have seemed somewhat like work. But this was enjoyable, and hopefully our listeners enjoyed as much as we did tonight.
Yeah. And if you didn't, that's fine.
Yeah. Because we had
a good
time. As
long as you enjoyed the intro music, that's really actually all that I care about. Because that is nostalgia as soon as that comes on.
Not my jokes. You're not coming here for my jokes?
Well, if all they wanted was the intro music, it's not that your jokes turned them off. It's just that the intro music was over, and then they just left.
And then they turned it off.
Right, yeah. So your jokes never had a chance. So they didn't even get turned off. They just... Why they didn't just YouTube Declan DP all night, I don't know. But for some reason, listened to our podcast for 50 seconds.
Guess what? Did you hear about the calendar? Its days are numbered. Dad jokes!
Oh, man. On that night. On that note. Whoops.
On that night.
There's something we say at the end, blah, blah, blah. Thanks for listening to Meeple Night.
Yeah, we'll see everybody in a fortnight or a month or whenever, a year and a half, 2 years.
We'll see you when we see you.
Yeah, good night and good luck.
Oh, I don't have outro music, so... Dun 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 dun. Today's episode was recorded on January 18th, 2024 and uploaded using Riverside FM and Anchor. Our theme music is All Night by Declan DP, provided by Audio Library Plus, which provides free and safe music for content creators. For all the latest on Meeple Night, listen to Meeple Night podcast. That's about it. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So until then, dream a little dream of games.